Welcome to The Fight with Teddy Atlas, presented by Dynamic Striking. I'm Ken Rideau, joined as always by the voice of all combat sports, boxing Hall of Famer, the great Teddy Atlas. Teddy, how you doing?
Good, good. Let's get my bookie to sponsor my picks on college football. 2-0, baby. last week, wishing everybody Happy New Year last week. And we came on the day before the two games to set up tonight's national title game. The two semifinal games, Alabama and Michigan, and then Washington and Texas. I pick Washington and Michigan to win, guaranteed it. And now tonight, of course, tomorrow, when this comes out, the game would have been already played. But I'm going to go with Michigan to win the whole thing and be the national collegiate champions this year. So I feel good about those picks, better than I did about some of my boxing picks at the end of the year. But you know what? I'm always honest about that stuff. And we got Andy Lee and Joe Parker coming up in a week or so that'll be on an interview on this show. So I look forward to that. Of course, Joseph Parker, with that huge upset over Wilder, he's right in the mix now. He's a player right there now. He was always in the mix, but now he's really at the top of the heap in there. And Andy Lee, his trainer, who does a great job. I think he could have been up for Trainer of the Year, too.
He was also a great fighter, too, for those who don't know.
Yeah, world champion. Junior middleweight champion, southpaw, and an Olympian. I caught his fights, actually, for NBC when I was calling all the Olympic fights back then for NBC. I called him. He represented Ireland. And I guess the next thing is just boxing began the new year the same way that it kind of lived the old one, with a controversial stoppage. We'll get into it specifically later. But here we are in 2024, and, you know, nothing changes. I mean, you have a controversial stoppage by Tony Weeks, and you also have more of the live soap opera that is the Golden Boy Ryan Garcia, you know, sideshow, which really puts new meaning to dysfunctional relationships. I guess we could talk about that a little bit now, but we'll get into it later more. But it's amazing. I mean, they make the Adams family look like Leave It to the Beaver. Remember Leave It to Beaver, or whatever that show was, that Leave It to Beaver or Little House on the Prairie. I mean, the relationship between Golden Boy and his fighter, I don't know how much longer he will be his fighter, because it depends how long that contract is. But once that contract ends, this saga will end. This soap opera will end.
It's so clear that they hate each other, like to the point of despising. I mean, he comes out and says, well, never mind Devin Haney, I want to fight Rolly. And then Oscar immediately says, nope, it's the title shot against Rolly. Rolly goes to O'Hara Davies when he wins. Of course, that didn't happen. But it's just crazy. It's like they're antagonistic to each other.
It was even worse than that. On the Zone, when they interviewed De La Hoya before the co-feature fight, before Davies fought, they interview him, and they're interviewing him about that a little bit. You know, about that, what's next for Garcia. Because it was obvious that Garcia had put up that post that, you know, I'm instructing. I mean, he wrote it that way verbatim.
Yes.
I'm instructing my promoter, Oscar De La Hoya, in case you forgot you're my promoter. I'm instructing you to now no longer pursue the Haney fight, but to go make the Rolly Romero fight. So they ask him about it on the air. And it was unbelievable. Unbelievable. You can't make that stuff up. It's sitcom stuff. It really is. It really is. I wasn't kidding. It's the Adams. I mean, they do. They make the Adams family look like Little House on the Prairie. Like everything is, you know, perfect, and you know, you're gonna have apple pie and everyone's gonna be together and sing Kumbaya. He came out and he says, so they ask him about, you know, Garcia next. And I guess they're expecting him to say, yeah, I was just instructed to go and make the, you know, to make the Romero fight. Instead, he makes believe he don't know nothing about that. He's not even, he's got blinkers on. I give him credit. He's not, he goes right past that. And he says, yes, I've been instructed by Ryan Garcia to go and make the Haney fight.
I would have done the same thing if I was Oscar. It was the one time where I thought he handled it correctly. Like, don't handle business like this, Ryan. What are you doing? We can talk about this together. I like the way Oscar handled it. Like, yeah, okay. We're in talks with Devin Haney. And did you see Devin Haney's reaction to Ryan's tweet? Called him a pussy and something else. And was like, don't ever say my name. And then Bill Haney gets into it with Bernard Hopkins at the fight. And they start shoving each other. It's crazy.
Well, not each other. I think it was only one side. I don't think any fighter is going to go show
Bernard Hopkins, seemed kind of amateurish coming from Bernard Hopkins.
It wasn't a real shove. From what I heard, it was like a silly stuff. But
put it
whatever.
This way,
but
he definitely gave him a forearm shiver.
But
he
the whole did thing. That. Yeah, but not hard. But the whole thing is so. It just keeps getting more. It just keeps going more and more into the Twilight Zone.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Getting stranger and stranger, because just the way it looks, the way it sounds. Like Oscar, apparently Bernard kept saying, I don't follow this stuff too much, I'll be honest. It's like, come on. But the little bit that I know about it, it's like Bernard, and I have to know something to talk about it, but Bernard was saying, come to the bathroom with me.
To Haney.
Just weird. Yeah, with Haney, come to the bathroom with me. Come to the bathroom with me. You know, like he's going to beat him up in a bath. But it just sounds, the whole thing sounds just bizarre. The whole thing. And again, look, you could say all you want that Oscar handled it right with the way that Ryan, you know, hit him with that news. Fine. But it's still something to be said about, you know, putting your dirty laundry out there for everybody to see. You know, you just, and now Oscar's on a buying binge of buying fighters, signing binge, signing fighters. I wonder if he got some sortie money, or it's just, you know, they're using the money to sign guys that, you know, they have to. They're probably getting more dates. With DAZN, and they don't have fighters to fill the dates, to be quite honest. So they're signing guys up, and they're going very heavy in 140-pound. You wonder if that's partly because of Garcia is also in that division, that they're going heavy. You don't know what to think after a while.
He must have spent a lot of money on O'Hara Davies, because O'Hara Davies was like ranting about or bragging about his deal with Oscar and how great Oscar is. I'm like, I wonder if they gave him a couple extra bucks to like go over the top with his description. You never hear people fawning over their promoters. I mean, the guy's a promoter.
You don't have to give guys like that, Ken, a lot of money, because they weren't making a lot of money. Come on.
Yeah. Relatively speaking.
Did you know Davies before he was on the air the other night? No, I could answer for you. So, you know, it's not like he was coming from a place where he was making money or making a lot of money. So whatever he got.
I'm saying they must have given him a premium to what he was getting for him to be fawning over Oscar the way he was. Because you never hear someone talk about their promoter in such glowing terms. Promoter is a promoter. They get paid. It's like your accountant. They get paid to do their job.
He's signing guys left and right. Again, either he's got more dates, he's got to have fighters, or he's trying to, you know, lock up the 140-pound class. He's, I don't know if it's attached to the personal stuff with Ryan Garcia, or he was with the rest of us. We were all over, what was it, a month and a half ago, we were in Saudi Arabia, and they were handing out money all over the place, making fights. And Oscar was putting his best foot forward with our host over there. you know, that was running everything. And he was putting his best foot forward to try to get in there to do some more promotions, which they did right after that. They did all those fights. The one we're talking about before that Joseph Parker put off the big upset with Wilder. And he, and Joseph and his trainer Andy going to come on our air either next week or the following week. But it's just a bizarre... It's like watching Jerry Springer reruns. You know, it's... I hate to say, like, you know, the great comedian, what's his name? Sebastian Maniscalco, whatever his name is. Maniscalco. He, aren't you embarrassed? You know, he does that. Aren't you embarrassed? I mean, after a while, just, again, you got to keep some of that to yourselves. But I just had to start with, the new year, it might be a new year, but it's same old stuff for that continuing. Again, the only word I could use is like, it's a soap opera, you know? And obviously this all started as far as to Ryan Garcia changing his mind from Haney to Romero after he met with Floyd Mayweather and did a run and posted the video, you know, of the run. That they did, what was it, 2 a.m, 3 a.m, whatever, which is nothing no, but that's not unusual for Floyd. He's known for running at, you know, all early times in the morning. But so they did the run, and then I guess it was the next day Ryan sends that post out. I've changed my mind, new direction. We're going after we're going after Romero. So anyway, it's all stuff that we'll talk about more. I guess first we'll cover the fights, and then as needed we'll touch on whatever the surrounding issues are with the fights.
Yeah, let's jump into it. We'll start on the undercard with the Arnold Barboza ends an 11-month layoff with a beatdown of Zolasani. Ndongeni gets the TKO win. Pretty one-sided all night long. I mean, Barboza was just taking him apart. The kid had a lot of heart, though, the South African fighter, Ndongeni. Entertaining fight in the sense that watching the guy continue to fight his heart out while Barboza was just slowly breaking him down. I liked it. What'd you think?
Yeah, 29-0, 11 knockouts, Arnold Barboza Jr. And he stops Ndongeni, as you said. Ndongeni showed a lot of heart. Look, it was a methodical breakdown and a methodical beatdown. Barboza dominated the fight. You know, he's another fighter that's signed with Oscar, and Oscar's putting him out there and talking about him. And this was the first time we really got a look at him. Well, I got a look at him. I think most people probably got a real look at him. Dominated, and the corner finally stopped it after 8 rounds of Ndongeni taking more and more of a beating. Solid workman, like guy, for me, is the way I would describe Barboza Jr. Good technically, uses a jab, goes to the body. He can put punches together. He covers up well, defensively responsible. He's just a solid guy. He does everything well, nothing great. He's not a Ferrari, as some of the other top guys might be, you know, looked at. I guess you could do that and say they're Ferraris in that division, with the special talents that some of those guys have and that they've shown so far at a certain level. He's more like a Tesla, you know, where, you know, Tesla's a good car. It's an electric car, efficient, not flashy. Again, one-sided methodical beatdown for Barboza Jr., and his opponent showed terrific heart. Next
up, we've got Ismael Barroso takes a part in the first round and stops O'Hara Davies. Good revenge fight for a comeback, bounce back fight for for Barbosa coming off that very controversial stoppage to Rolly Romero in the ninth round of a 12-round title fight. Tony Weeks was the ref for that fight, and he was the ref in the main event here, and that'll be a main story that we'll talk about in the upcoming breakdown of the main event there with Virgil Ortiz. But in this one, I mean, it looked like it was a little bit early first round, but he was getting pieced up. I don't know. He got caught and couldn't seem to recover and just got the crap beat out of him by Barroso. What do you think there? Was he just not warm? Got caught cold? What are your thoughts?
No, the main event, Ken, was early stoppage, not this. There was no choice. There was no choice. The guy was gone. You know, he got caught it didn't look like a devastating punch, but it was a clean punch that obviously he didn't see, where Ismael Barroso, he took a little step back and he made, took that little step back and he made, we're talking about Barroso and Davies, right?
Yeah, O'Hara Davies. Yeah, sorry. With all the stoppages, I got a little confused. Yeah, it was an early stoppage. Barroso had him like on Queer Street. Yeah. He was out on his feet.
No, he was. Yeah, he was gone. So anyway, so Barroso, he's 40 years old. He looks like he's 60. God bless. You know, he's gonna make money now. I want him to make money. No, seriously.
I'm with you.
He got Venezuela. Screwed around with Romero and with Weeks and Romero. We'll go into that a little deeper later, but now he gets a chance to right the ship. He righted the ship. He's supposed to be just, he's just supposed to be the second guy in the ring. And it turns out he's the first.
Gatekeeper.
He's the main guy in the ring. He was supposed to be just the dance partner. That's all he was. He took over the whole show.
O'Hara and Oscar were talking about him like he was just an afterthought in the preview of this fight. I mean, O'Hara Davies was already planning his next moves, talking about it like it was a foregone conclusion. They didn't realize this guy's
foregone conclusion. I mean, Oscar was talking about Davies fighting against Romero for the title. Next, after he wins, if he won this fight, which he didn't, but he was talking about that. And he was taking shots at Garcia and with Davies. Like, you know, in other words, he was pushing Garcia to the side, ignoring him and talking about Davies being, you know, the next guy there in the division. He wins tonight. He's going to fight for the title against Romero and all that stuff. Anyway, things didn't go well for Oscar as far as that plan.
One thing to point out here, Barroso coming into this fight was 24-4-2 with
He's got 23 knockouts now. Yeah, and look.
He can crack.
He can punch. Yeah, well, he showed that against Romero.
That's right.
He was winning that fight against Romero before it got prematurely stopped. So again, 40 years old. Really, I want to see him make money now. Who knows? He probably get the rematch with Romero, and he gets that. We'll see what happens. I mean, you got to favor Romero, you know, being younger and being forewarned a little bit now against Barroso. But still, he's got a chance to win that fight. It's great for him again. You don't see too many guys at that age doing this. Like we said, he had just been signed by Golden Boy. He was being pushed by Golden Boy to fight Rolly Romero if he won. And he wins by first round knockout. Again, the breakdown, Barroso's a southpaw. He took like a half a step and just made Davies miss her right hand. Davies was definitely reaching in. And I'm thinking that he's going to catch him and maybe, you know, go on to the promised land of what the lawyer was talking about. And a left hand got in the way. He countered with a straight left hand from the southpaw position. And that's all she wrote. you know, and again, their latest, I think that was their latest signing. Obviously, they can't feel too good about that signing right now. And the guys that are out there that are making these decisions, that are, you know, the talent evaluators, if you will, to make these signings, they can't feel too great about that. But anyway, they look, there's also a personal side to it. You know, people could say, hey, you're doing things that, I guess you could say, all's love and fair, right?
All's fair in love and war.
Love and war, and businesses can be war, right? So I guess you could go down that road and say that. But when you're playing around and doing what Oscar was doing, obviously shoving Davies up in a way, up the nose of Garcia, and doing what he was doing, going against his wishes, you know, looking to push him in there for the Romero fight, and, you know, instead of what Garcia was asking for. When you start doing that, you're playing around with karma a little bit. I mean, I know it's matchmaking. I know it's a left hand. Nobody knows better than I do. I've been in the business 50 years. I understand the reality that these things can happen. But you're messing around with karma doing all that stuff. And it didn't, again, the karma didn't go well, at least in this one, for De La Hoya and company. And you can see right after the fight, Ken, you can see Bernard, who's part of the company, and I think it's Gomez, one of his friends, I think lifelong friends of De La Hoya, who is involved in a company, maybe a vice president or something, whatever. You can see the three of them off camera, like looking at each other like, oh my goodness. how do we step in this? You know what I mean? Like when you step in something and you look down and you say, oh, I got to get this off my shoe. You know, I mean, it was like one of those moments. It was
Eric Gomez is the president of Golden Boy.
Yeah. Anyway.
So it says on his bio.
No, I think you're right. Now, what's the next one?
All right, next up, we have Virgil Ortiz back in action. He stops Frederick Lawson in the first round. Really not much to see there other than Tony Weeks stops
gets hit a couple.
Yeah,
Let me jump in. Barossa, you can't, again, 2024, boxing just can't get out of its own way. You really? Here, the same thing. I don't care if it's 2024, 2054. I think we're going to be saying, we won't be saying it, I won't. You'll be around because you're so healthy and you're taking all those athletic greens more than I'm even taking. So you'll be around still. Me? Nah, probably not. But the same thing will be spoken about, Ken. Barossa, after that fight, after he pulls off that you know, knockout, right? He's now the WBA interim junior welterweight champion. Romero is the WBA junior welterweight champion recess. I have no idea what this all means, you know, except that boxing, if I don't know, I can't even begin to imagine the frustration of you guys, our fans, the boxing fans, because I have no idea what it means, except that boxing is still screwed up by all these belts and organizations who hand them out. We need a national commission. Seriously. I everyone knows that I started the idea. I started getting signatures for a petition to get the national commission. We are more. I do have a team together of lawyers, former congressmen, really good, solid people. We have people down in D.C. ready to help us. We're looking for dates to get an audience with Congress. We're moving forward. We're looking at a pension plan. All those things will be part of it. And getting rid of this proliferation of nonsense with these belts and these organizations that dictate more than they should dictate, as far as who fights for them, who has them, how many champions they are. It's just, You ask an average fight fan who the champions are, they don't know. There's so many different ones. I mean, it's like 400 belts out there. It's lunacy. It's destroying the sport that I love, that you guys all love. And piece by piece, you know, just by little cuts. And anyway, let's move on to the next fight.
Next up, Virgil Ortiz, like I say, takes apart Frederick Lawson in one round. Main story here, though, is Tony Weeks stops the fight before any knockdowns. Lawson was getting cracked, but he didn't even look to be seriously compromised, at least to the extent we would expect a stoppage. I mean, it looked to be one-sided and maybe a foregone conclusion, but this is not the way that the ref is supposed to behave. Like, maybe the guy's a slow starter. Maybe he gets his second win. I don't know, but that stoppage got a lot of people's attention. And like I said earlier, Weeks also the person who stopped the Barroso fight when he was in with Rolly Romero. So Tony Weeks steals the show in the main event. What'd you think?
Which is never what you want to happen. Okay.
Never.
Ortiz looked good. Let's start with that. He looked sharp, alert. Punches had snap in them. Form was good, because I know the fans want my evaluation, I think, on that to start. Before we get to this other stuff, unfortunately, that became really, really the stuff we're going to talk about now, which should be just about the performance of Ortiz. And unfortunately, with what happened and transpires too often in our sport, we're not talking about the fight. But I will finish the evaluation of up to that point. He had snap in his punches, Ortiz. His form was good. He was the boss, as we knew he'd be, but he wasn't reckless doing it. He took his time. Eventually backing Lawson onto the ropes, where he went to his forte, what makes him Virgil Ortiz, his body work. Or maybe I should say his body attack, because he attacks the body and he is committed to attacking the body. And look, Golden Boy selected Lawson for a reason. I said he would knock him out. I think I said the fourth round. All right. He selected him for a reason. In his first fight back after a long layoff and health issues, you know, he picked a guy in Lawson who had stepped up three times in his career, and he lost all three of those times. And the way he lost is what's significant. He got knocked out. He got stopped in all three of those fights when he stepped up in each one. Now it's four times and knocked out four times. They knew Lawson would be right there to engage Ortiz. And to be completely frank, when the fight started, I have to tell you, Lawson had the legs of a shot fighter. I know that it's easy. Teddy, it's easy to say, no, you know, Monday morning quarterback. No, please. All right.
Even if it's easy to see now, you see what you see. What are you supposed to do? Not comment on it because you see it? Maybe he didn't have shot legs until he got in there in the first round. That's the point.
He had worn and not sturdy legs. And for me, the way I describe it is it's like branches on a tree that can no longer hold any weight or stand up to a strong wind. And Ortiz, of course, blew him into the ropes. And look, just before that, he staggered Lawson with a jab. That happens. It happens. But he did. He buckled him with a jab. Then he gets him on the ropes, and although he was blocking most of the blows, and he was, Lawson was blocking most of those blows. And he had, you know, as I said, he had been jolted and buckled a little earlier, you know, by a jab to the head. But there's no doubt that Ortiz was going to stop him. But for the referee to step in that early was wrong. But let me go now into something else that it has to go into. X-ray, we have to go into X-ray's CAT scan mode. And follow this a little deeper. And again, just before he did step in, I want to make sure I put everything out there. Just before the ref did step in, there was a little drop. There was a little give of, he was blocking most of them, but there was a little sag by Lawson. There was. And it wasn't long after that that he was going to get stopped, probably. Maybe the next round, maybe that round. It was like 20 seconds left, whatever. But, and here's the but. I wrote this. I'm going to read it to you because it's very important where I'm going to go. There's no doubt that Ortiz was going to stop him, but for the referee to step in that early was just wrong. Now, this was my conclusion right after the fight. This is coming right out of my eyes after the fight. My eyes, which are blurry now, and that's why I got glasses on. But they weren't blurry at that point. To step in that early was just wrong. Then you never should have sanctioned the fight. Now, again, this was right after the fight I write this. And you're going to find out why this is relevant in a minute. You never should have sanctioned the fight because Lawson shouldn't have been in the ring. And the second he got touched, you were going to save him. You being Weeks. You were going to save him from being hurt. Okay, that's what a ref's supposed to do. It looked that way as if you knew what we all did, that this was a mismatch. So the second it started appearing to be just that, you jumped in, you being the referee, Tony Weeks. Either that or something more nefarious was going on. And I wouldn't even bother going there. Talking about corruption, that stuff. I won't even go there. Either way, Tony Weeks didn't perform like a professional ref, and it's not the first time we talked about it. So we need to do the same thing we do when fighters can no longer perform, and they are a danger to themselves. Retire them. Tony Weeks is a risk to his profession now. That's it. Okay, that's what I saw right after. Now
I've got a breaking news here. You want to hear Tony Weeks' statement? No. I just found it.
No, I'm gonna read it.
Gotcha. Okay.
Where the hell you think I'm going? That's where I'm going with this. Yeah.
It just came out. I wasn't sure you'd seen it.
I don't know. I had it 2 days already. But you know what? Sam, run and get my phone. It's on the table because I'm gonna read it right from verbatim. I want to read it exactly. Because now, and while Sam's getting this for me, this was posted by somebody, right? There's a lot of stuff gets posted up there. And it was posted that Weeks supposedly, because I want to make sure I'm clear that we're putting this out very clearly, stating that supposedly this was posted from Weeks, and again, the key word here is supposedly, that there are people saying that this, because there's people on the internet also saying this might not be actually an accurate posting because it's not on any of Weeks' social media, but it's out there. And if it's true, then there needs to be an immediate full-scale investigation. And the Nevada Commission and a referee need to answer some serious question. The entire commission there needs to shut down. This is powerful stuff. This is power. I know. And I'm being very careful. Again, if this post is true. And again, it was posted out there. Somebody put it out there. They're probably getting more hits than they probably normally get now from it. I hope it's true. I don't know who the guy is that posted it. I was just told that it was posted. And I hope, I'm going to say the guy is a responsible guy. I hope so. But I am going to make sure that we do our job, me and Ken, and make it very clear we don't know the accuracy. We just know it's posted. We don't know if it's exactly Tony Weeks's statement. But what I am saying, if it is, there needs to, the commission needs to shut down until there's an investigation in there. And I'm going to tell you right now, if there's not an investigation, I'm going to call Pedro Martinez Fraga, I'm going to call Keith Sullivan, I'm going to call Dan Donovan, former congressman, our team that's looking to get a national commission. I'm going to call them all. And I'm going to tell them, we have to pursue this. This is the lifeblood of this sport. You're talking about endangering lives here. It's already a dangerous enough sport. We know that. They understand the risk fighters when they go on. But if this is true, then you're talking about the people that are supposed to protect the fighters are not doing that job. And even worse. So let me finish. I wrote out this statement. There has to be an investigation and there has to be answers. This is potentially criminally negligent actions and conduct that, if found true, people should be banned from the sport. And I don't say that easy or lightly. And face possible jail time. They were, if true, they were playing with someone's life in order to put a fight on television so that that date or that fight or event would not be canceled. So, okay, I'm going to read. Matter of fact, I'm going to let Ken read it. Ken, you have it? You have that statement? I want to just make sure it's... Okay, let me get it up. I just want to make sure it's the exact same one that we're talking about. And let's look at it. Let me see. It's got Tony Weeks' name there. And supposedly this is coming from Tony Weeks' mouth. Right, Ken? Am I correct?
Correct.
Am I correct, Ken? Okay, correct. Read it, Ken.
This is what is being attributed to Tony. What the public didn't know, that prior to the fight, they did a brain scan on him being Lawson, and it came up that he had an aneurysm, and they did a test again, and the same aneurysm came up. Another doctor was brought in, and they gave him the same examination, and he tested negative for the aneurysm, so they cleared him to fight. So if that's what he's saying, it sounds like we need someone to get in here and say that this aneurysm isn't there. And I think what he's implying, that someone was brought in to just basically like rubber stamp it.
He's not implying. He's very clearly telling us that that's why I stepped in. The same thing I was thinking that it looked like before I knew this. That he knew something was wrong, and as soon as the guy got touched, he was going to step in so somebody didn't get killed. I'm going to use that straw. Yeah, I say it again, in case you had cotton in years, so somebody didn't get killed.
As they have in the past. They have.
He is saying, first of all, we got to get answers. Either way, we got to find out. Because if this is true, that commission has to be shut down. They got to find out who the doctors are. They got to find out. I don't even know how Weeks would have this information. Because this is not something that is normally shared with a referee. Medical tests, brain scans is not normally shared.
Which begs the question, is this is really Tony Weeks' statement?
100%. And we can't say it clearer. We're saying it again. We don't know. We just know it's being put out, purported that it is. And if it is, really, I love this sport. I love this sport.
Michael Benson, who shares a lot of boxing info out of the UK, reposted this. He's the online boxing editor in his bio for TalkSport.com. So I would assume if he's and he usually has credible intel, that he'd done some investigation.
Listen, if there's any truth to it, again, I love this sport, but this sport cannot just go forward without clearing this.
And Golden Boy put out a tweet yesterday that says Frederick Lawson was cleared by a Nevada State Athletic Commission sanctioned doctor to fight on Saturday night. All other questions should be referred to Nevada State Athletic Commission.
Well, that's refer them. That's refer them. That's refer them. I want answers. This is the one sport you don't get answers. They just move forward. NFL, my God, there'd be a full investigation. I mean, Congress would literally get involved if there wasn't, if you did something like this. Really? Or questionable, the possibility of doing something like this. I'll say it again. If this was football, you wouldn't go forward until this thing was completely rooted out, until they got full, clear answers. I want full, clear answers. Really. I want to know what the fig, what's true, what's not true. We need to know. We need to know. And that's the problem with boxing. They don't have an arm, infrastructure, an arm to it that investigates itself. I mean, these commissions are a joke. They really are. They're a joke, half of them. And some of them are good meaning, but some of them are, you know, they're politically appointed. The guys that run them, they're appointed politically. I know in Nevada they are. And then they answer to the promoters, because without the promoter doing business, they wouldn't even have a business to run if there was nobody promoting. So they got close proximity relationships with the promoters. There's no watchdog watching this kind of stuff. We need to have that now. Boxing has never properly investigated itself. We need to demand it. And I'm telling you, I'll say it again. If somewhere this investigation doesn't appear to be real and doesn't get us answers, real answers, I'm going to ask my people to take it ourselves and take it to the right people, the same people we're looking to get a national commission. And the reason we're trying to get a national is to make the sport better. In all areas, pension, get rid of the rigged decision, the bad decisions, the bad ratings, the bad rankings, the 150,000 belts that are out there, all of that stuff, and this, to make sure that medical procedures are unilaterally proper and conform to across the board. So when fighters get into the ring in this very risky business to begin with, that they are looked out for the best that they can be looked out for. They are as healthy as they are supposed to be when they get in that ring. And this is suggesting that was not true. This is a suggest the possibility. And again, Oscar came out, fine, go to the commission. He's right. But he came out, he said that the doctor cleared him. But our problem is in that statement. What about initially the one that didn't clear him? The one said that he had an aneurysm. What about that?
I was going to say that typically you don't share someone's medical records publicly. I think it's like a HIPAA violation to talk about someone's medical records. So if that is in fact the case, that seems odd. And to
yes. Yes, HIPAA violation. That one of the many things. That's another one.
You can't talk about someone's health background and health records publicly without their consent, to the best of my knowledge. I mean, that's what it would seem like.
Hey, listen, I don't want to get too into personal too much, but if it was true and Weeks really felt that way, why did he ref the fight? Because really, now you're talking about a moral obligation. Really, you're talking about a moral obligation to say, wait a minute, I'm not comfortable doing this fight. I am not comfortable refereeing this fight. And he should have taken himself out of that fight. If that's true, if this is true.
To your point, I think you mentioned already, but I don't think that they share those medical findings with the referee before the fight, do they? To tell you, hey, this guy's got a compromised knee, this guy's got a bad ankle, watch out for this.
Never. Not that I know of. Never. This is news to me.
Yeah, there's a lot of unanswered questions here. It'll be interesting. And like I said, the one thing that we definitely want to stress here is that this is allegedly what's being said on the internet. It's allegedly the post has since been deleted. It was posted to Facebook and now is taken down, which would make sense in either regard, because even if it was true, it's not Tony's place to say someone had a brain aneurysm or didn't, or where do you draw the line? Like, you talk about all his, the guy's medical records publicly on the internet. But yeah, a lot of questions here to your point. If he had an aneurysm, what ref would want to get in there? I mean, it wasn't that long ago that we had a death in the ring on a high profile fight. So yeah, lots of questions to be asked. And Tony Weeks allegedly, Mike Coppinger's reporting that Tony Weeks told Beto Duran after the fight that he saw Lawson's eyes roll back in his head, and that's why he stopped the fight when he did.
Listen, I don't know what he saw, what he didn't see. I want to know about this. The rest of it is a moot point right now. I want to know about
Agreed.
This. What we just yep. went over. I want to freaking know about this. And you can't be comfortable moving on in this business if this freaking stuff's going on. You can't. You can't. You're not in good conscience. As I call yourself a half a decent person. You can't. And, you know, and if he saw his eyes roll back, I don't know. Maybe he did, but it looked to that point like he was blocking most of the punches. Again, he did start to sag a little bit. It looked like from the attack to the body a little bit that he started to sag, and it wasn't going to be long. And again, we saw earlier he got staggered by a jab. Oh, boy. 2024, right? That's the year, Ken. Right, 2024.
Off to a crack.
How come
start.
It sound? How come it sounds so familiar to 2023, huh, Sam? Right. It sounds. Don't it sound like 2023, or maybe 2022, or maybe 2021, or maybe 2020, or maybe
1921.
Jeez.
We'll keep everyone posted as we learn more here, either via social media or on the show next week. But big scrap coming up next week in light heavyweight. Artur Beterbiev back in action against Callum Smith from Quebec City. Curious to see how Beterbiev looks. He seems to have long layoffs in between these fights. I don't know. I think I get the impression you think this one's going to be competitive. Callum Smith, Artur Beterbiev. What are you looking for?
I like Callum Smith. First of all, he's a strong physical guy. He's tall. He's got a good frame, good skeleton, good body. Tall, long arms. He's got physicality to him. He's physically strong. He's got a physical presence, and he's got the mentality of a fighter. He wants to fight you. I don't know if that's the right mentality with Mr. Beterbiev, you know, to be quite frank, who's just a killer. He's just he's a destructive machine, and he loves you to fight with him so he can get what he wants to get, which is into your body, into your chin. And, you know, he's a terrific puncher, Beterbiev. He's just a destructive force, and he was bred that way. Comes from a part in the world kind of like the great legendary, iconic UFC former champion who retired comes from. Who am I talking about?
Khabib.
Khabib
Nurmagomedov.
That kind of, he comes from those kind of parts of the world where there's a tradition, there is sort of a code, a warrior's code in becoming a fighter, and that you have to adhere to this code of behavior to be a true warrior, to fight like one, to behave like one. And Beterbiev, he does that. Again, Callum Smith, a lot of people right away write him off. Maybe he will be another knockout victim to Beterbiev. What I like is that he controls range. He moves his head, so he's defensively aware, responsible. As I said, he's physically strong. He's got good power. He looks to land the right hand a lot. He's got a fighter's mentality, Callum Smith. He likes to engage you. He believes in his physicality. He believes in that he can get inside. He loves to get inside, go to the body, and work. He believes that he'll get to you that way, and then he'll be the better man. Again, I don't know if that's the right way. I don't think it's the right way to go about it in this particular fight, but he does have that confidence. I like it. He does have that attitude. I like it. He throws short punches. As I said, he'll engage you in a minute. Being that he is long, he does know how to control range. I would hope and think that the fight plan for you guys across the pond, you know I miss you. Happy New Year. I would think that the fight plan would be to control range, use those long arms, stay on the outside, you know, and try to go about catching Beterbiev on a way in, giving him angles, keeping separation, not engaging with him. And if you do, do it in short spurts, but not engaging with him too long. I also noticed that Colin Smith goes to the body and he works off the body with uppercuts really well. He also looks to time you and punches in between shots, which only guys that are confident and experienced can do because they're calm enough to sort of sit in a storm, you know, sit. They're calm enough to just, you know, stay inside and as you punch with you. He's got that ability. He's got those eyes, but most importantly, he's got that attitude, that confidence, where he can sit in a pocket. But I don't think he should be in this pocket too long. Use your long arms, stay on the outside, and look to see if you can make Beterbiev or help him get old. I think he's 38 now, 39. He had 300 amateur fights. You know, it's a lot of fights. It's a lot of mileage. He's had his way in the pros for the most part, I know. But still, he's taken punches in the pros too, like anybody else. He's been in a couple tough ones. So maybe you could stay on the outside and hope the guy grows old in front of your eyes. But for me, I'm looking forward to the fight because I love Beterbiev. And I love a guy with an attitude like Colin Smith. So I'm looking forward to see, you know, to see a fight, F-I-G-H-T, a fight, because that's what these two guys do.
Yep, going to be a good one. Let's talk about some of the fighters in the news. Last week, Jarrell Big Baby Miller gets arrested for carjacking. I think that basically his car got repossessed, so he went down there and basically took his own car back. But either way, not a good look. I don't think that... I still think it's a car theft, whether you think the car is yours or not. But strange that he would get pinched for getting his car repossessed, given the big money fight he just had in Saudi Arabia. But I was reading something about maybe he had some lawsuits against him from when the failed drug test cost him the Anthony Joshua fight, that maybe he had some outstanding debts. But this is just purely speculation on the internet. I'm just trying to think of a reason why a guy who seemingly just had a big payday would get a pickup truck repossessed. But crazy ongoings. Never a dull moment with Jarrell Miller.
All right, number one. Jarrell Miller is now the poster child for missed opportunities and poor decisions, which is sad. As far as what's out, to answer your question or to at least pursue that, what's out there on the internet as to the question that fans are asking, it's the right question. The guy just came back from Saudi Arabia. Everybody was getting bags of money. Where's his bag? Well, I would try to answer that by saying, I don't know what he got paid. I don't think his bag was as big as the other guy's bag, quite frankly, that were on that card, honestly. And to Ken's point, and he hit it on a button, I don't think it's any secret that Miller has lawsuits out there, that he's owed people money. And so that's where some of the money, I'm sure, went. And also, for people that don't understand boxing, how it works, or usually works, you don't get paid directly. The promoter pays you. The promoter gets paid, and then the promoter, you know, pays you, or your manager pays you. In this case, his promoter is Salida Promotions, and they've had a lot of problems in their relationship, and I don't know if he owed money also to that promote, because I know there were lawsuits going on. And again, he's been involved in a lot of lawsuits. So there's speculation that he does owe money in a few different places. So if the promoter got paid first, which is usually the case, but I'm not 100% sure, but I'm going to say then the promoter would take off what he is owed and, you know, and then pay Miller. And who knows what that number is by the time you get to that place. So apparently he didn't come home with that, a suitcase of money when it was all said and done. Who knows? But that answers that question, or at least helps give a little light into the possibilities of the answer to that question. Where was his money if he just came back from sortie? At the end of the day, it's sad to hear, because this is a guy who blew a chance to really maybe be heavyweight champion of the world, besides making a lot of money. He blew a $5 million, you know, payday when he had the fight with Joshua, and then he tests positive. He loses the fight, and Andy Ruiz steps in, becomes heavyweight champion of the world, and makes, by the time he goes a few fights, what'd he make? Over $10 million. Right,
he made five for the last minute replacement, and I think he made 13 for taking the fight in Saudi, because I think that his they had to convince him to go to Saudi for the fight. That's what I've heard. Yeah. 13
he made
minutes,
a lot
so
of money.
18 all in. That's a lot of money.
He made well over $10 million. Let's be safe, Andy Ruiz, and that could have been possibly it could have possibly been Miller. We don't know if Miller would have beat Joshua that night, but you know what? He would have had a chance. He would have had a
chance. That's right.
And that chance got taken away by his choices. And so I don't feel good about that. I mean, I know you're a grown up. You're responsible for your own choices in life. You are. There's no doubt about it. But it doesn't mean that I revel or we revel in seeing people make bad choices and pay the consequences. So... And I'll add two other things, Ken, to this unfortunate saga. One is, it sure as hell helps if you have good people around you to steer you. Maybe you don't listen to people. I don't know. This is Teddy Atlas just talking about what's important to me. That I see these athletes, whether they're basketball players that are prodigies, or baseball, or football, they're all treated differently as soon as they show that kind of talent. And some of them are lucky enough to have, I name one right now, LeBron James. I know a lot of people don't like him. Some people love him. Some people don't like him. All I'm talking about is he made the right choices. It has to have something to do with his mother. Somebody. I don't think he had a father. But somebody that was around him, helping him make those choices, steering him, talking to him, counseling him. In the right way. And it sure helps when you're lucky enough, whether you're a fighter, basketball player, whatever, you're getting into this world you were never prepared for to make this kind of money. It sure helps if you have the right people around you. And some people don't listen. But if you, that's what I would tell you young fighters out there. If you could have someone around you that you trust, that can advise you properly, even if they tell you things that you don't want to hear all the time, because they're doing it for your own good. Like a parent. Listen to them. You might be glad you did. So, the last thing I want to throw on this is, Ken, we watched that fight. And Miller fought Dubois. And Dubois, I give him credit. He was a guy that always had talent. Good fighter. Technically solid. Good hand speed. Good power. Knows how to fight. He was beating Joe Joyce when Joyce was still undefeated, and he submitted. He gave in. I'll use the word that I don't like to use for fighting, but people would use, he quit. He gave in. Then he's fighting Usyk. I know it was controversial a little bit with the low blow, all that stuff. At the end of the day, he's in that fight, fighting a competitive fight with Usyk, and he breaks down. He breaks down. He gets broken down in the end. This is a guy who reminds me of Buster Douglas. Buster Douglas was a guy that was big. He could punch. He had good hand speed. He knew how to fight. He was a good fighter, a good heavyweight. But when he fought the moments, when the moment of truth came in his big fights, like Tony Tucker, other fights, he gave in. People said he didn't have heart. He was a dog, a bad dog, not a good dog. Like nowadays, you know, they say, yeah, the guy's a dog. You know, yeah. Back in those days when I was around, they said, you're a coyote. You're woof, 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 woof. You know, you got no heart. You're a dog in a bad way. Now it's a good way. A mutt. And they said he didn't have heart. Well, they were wrong. Anyone who gets to the ring has heart. It's a matter of how much confidence, how much discipline goes along with that heart. But if you get in the ring, you're better than 90% of the people out there as far as having a heart. Please. But anyway, that's my personal feeling. But there are degrees to everything. Buster Douglas was labeled with that label, a label that no fighter wants, no person would want in any dimension of life. And Mike Tyson fight comes along. And on that night, he lives up to everything that everyone thought Buster Douglas could have been when he wasn't, if he had heart. On that night, he had heart. He had everything. He showed all the components. He was that fighter that everyone thought could be but never was. Well, that night he was. He even survived a vicious uppercut to get off the floor and knock out Tyson. He was that man that night. He never was again after that. But how many people could say they had that one night? I think he earned like... In the next fight with Holyfield, he got knocked out for the heavyweight title. I think he earned like $20 million, $22 million. God bless him. But Dubois was my Buster Douglas watching that fight. He really was. My heart was with Dubois in a way, redeem yourself. Because I believe in redemption. And that's one of the great things that this sport offers. And he redeemed himself. He's a guy that had that moniker on him that nobody wants. And on this particular night, he went in there with a very game. I know he was 333 pounds, absurd. But a very game Jarrell Miller. A very tough Jarrell Miller. A very experienced Jarrell Miller. He went in there and he just made up his mind, I am not going to give in. And he fought his pants off. He did all the things we knew he could do. Put combinations together, punches, you know, with power, with speed, technically controls range, fight inside, fight outside, counterpunch, all the things we saw that he could do. But he did them consistently, and he did them when the devil knocked at the door. When the devil to give in knocked and said, give in, that's enough. It's getting tough now. It's getting a little hot in here. Come on, come with me. Come on, come on. Come on, it's getting a little difficult. Come on, you did enough. No, he shut that door. He shut that door. He said, freak you. And he redeemed himself. He wasn't fighting that night Dubois for a paycheck. Yeah, he got paid, I get it. He was fighting for his life, to get his life back, to get his name back, to get his reputation back, to be able to live with himself the rest of his life. And I give him all the credit in the world for doing that. And the reason I bring this up, Jarrell Miller showed tremendous heart, kept coming, kept coming. He thought in his head he was just going to keep coming. And Dubois, like everyone thought probably, a lot of people thought, Dubois would eventually capitulate. Eventually would give in. But he didn't. And during what transpired, what happened, Miller took punches to get to that point. And he took punches the first round, the second round, the third round, the fourth round, the fifth round, the sixth round, seventh round. Every round, he took tremendous punches to try to get Dubois to the point where he would give in. But he never did. But what did happen was Miller took a ferocious beating. We forgot about it. We did. We moved on. Nobody talked about it. No writers, nobody. He took a ferocious beating. He took so many hard, clean punches. And he finally got stopped. He finally got broken down. Here's what I want to say about that. I'm making no excuses for nobody, Ken. I never excuse anyone's behavior. It's on you. I'm just putting out a possible scenario that with this stuff going on and him coming home and, you know, and going to steal his repossessed car back or possess back his repossessed car when he's not supposed to be the possessed, the guy doing that. Whatever it was, when he goes in there, he does this, that's a criminal act. And it has got him in a situation that's got him in. I guess there was a woman involved too with it. Again, no excuse. But there is a thing in football, it's very well known, and it's in boxing. It's from concussions, from being concussed. There's no doubt he was concussed that night. No doubt. Anyone want to argue that with me? Get a neurologist, let him watch that fight, and ask him if he doesn't think that he was concussed that night. Especially after then being dropped and beaten down, literally beaten to the floor. But there's a thing called PTE and CTE. Very serious. Very serious. The NFL has, you know, put millions of dollars into trying to solve that problem, trying to know more about it, where their players and former players that have been concussed a bunch of times, or some of them don't have to be a bunch of times. You know, it all depends on the genetics of that person, how that person's brain is made up and their skull is made up. Some are more vulnerable, some are less vulnerable. But football players that have had this syndrome, the NFL has been forced to finally, but over the last several years, to really get involved in trying to figure this out. They have all different protocols now for players that in the past they go right back into a game. They play the following week, no more. I'm just wondering if it's possible that Miller was suffering from some form of CTE, PTE, you know, obviously from being concussed in that fight that people aren't even thinking about that could be going on right now with him. To have something to do with this kind of behavior.
It could have been also one of those bang bang plays where he comes out there repossessing the car and he says, "You're not taking my car," and just takes his own car back. You know what I mean? So who knows? We'll wait till the facts come out.
He's making decisions that are not good decisions.
For sure.
And if your brain is
compromised.
Yeah, if your brain is scrambled a little bit extra, you know, guess what? It's even harder to make decisions now.
For sure.
So, anyway, I want to put that out there.
Before we go on, Teddy, let me just quickly say it's cold and flu season in the U.S., and no better time than ever to get yourself a subscription to Athletic Greens. Athletic Greens is the all-in-one green drink, one scoop in the morning, boom, insurance policy for your health and immune system. No matter how healthy your diet is, it's hard to get all the recommended and required vitamins, nutrients, and minerals. Athletic Greens has probiotics, prebiotics, and all the vitamins and minerals you need on a daily basis. Like I said, it's an if nothing else, consider an insurance policy for your health and immune system. For listeners of this show, if you go to athleticgreens.com and use the promo code ATLAS at checkout, they'll send you 10 free travel packs with your first purchase. The travel packs go with me everywhere. We're going to be recording in the next week or two a fight plan for the upcoming Usyk Fury fight that I know everyone's waiting to see. I'm dying to hear Teddy's keys to the fight. And you better believe that I'll be traveling with Athletic Greens travel packs. Again, athleticgreens.com/Atlas to take advantage of the special offer for our listeners. 10 free travel packs with your first purchase. Shout out to Athletic Greens. Teddy, one more fight I want to talk to you about, just announced at the end of last week. Anthony Joshua, by all reports, has a signed contract with Francis Ngannou for a big fight in Saudi, I think in March. Man, those guys have all the bread over there, and they're bringing the big fights to Saudi, making them happen. So however they're getting made, we're getting the fights. I don't know that necessarily everyone was looking for this fight, but they certainly turn out for these fights that are spectacles. Initially, Anthony and Eddie Hearn called this a gimmick fight when Ngannou fought Fury, but Ngannou's performance in that Fury fight got a lot of people's attention. He had Fury down late in the fight on the canvas. This one could be interesting. What do you think? What are you looking for in this one?
Well, first of all, he had him down on the canvas early in the fight, third round, but that's fine.
And sorry, then he
had
correct.
A great, yeah, that's fine. And he also had a great eighth round. He won two rounds. The third, he dropped him, he being Ngannou. And then, of course, the eighth round, he had a terrific round. But there wasn't enough continuity offensively, consistency offensively. And listen, it wasn't a barn burner fight. Fury did not look good. A lot of it has to do also, you got to give credit to Ngannou. He shocked the world. He just by being that prepared, looking that good for a guy in his first pro fight, boxing match, looking that good. And I don't think anyone gave him a chance except me. Maybe someone else out there, but I went on ESPN, I went on a few platforms, all platforms, and said, do not count this guy out. He's a great athlete, and he's been a fighter. He's been in the cauldron. He's been in the furnace. He's been in that place where he knows how to behave by being in the octagon, being in the ring that he's been in. He knows how to behave like a fighter. That is priceless. That you can't discount how important that is. Even though he didn't have boxing experience, it don't matter. He had that experience where he has been in the fire and he knew how to behave. So now he reaps the rewards. Again, it wasn't a scintillating fight. There was a lot of rounds in that Fury fight where nobody was doing anything. Fury stole a lot of rounds using the jab, controlling range. I do think Fury wasn't ready mentally. I do. But that does not in any way, and I think it impacted him, but in no way does that take away from Ngannou's performance. They did their job. Fury supposed to do his. They took care of theirs. They came mentally prepared, physically, emotionally, technically prepared. The trainer, Dewey, what's his name? Dewey, his trainer, Dewey.
Ngannou's trainer, one sec.
Yeah, I want to give him credit. I gave it to him already when the fight first took place. He did a terrific.
Dewey Cooper.
Great, yeah, Dewey Cooper. He did a tremendous job. And now, again, not a scintillating fight. A lot of close rounds, a lot of dead rounds. Like nobody was doing nothing. Like I said, Fury stole those rounds. But two rounds that on my scorecard that I gave to a guy. But here's the bottom line. I said it right after the fight. There was still only one winner that night. Yeah, I know on the scorecards that Fury won. But the real winner that night was Ngannou. And this is what he won. He won credibility and a chance to make a big bag of money. Another bag of money. They already gave him a bag over in Saudi for that one. Now they're going to give him a big... They might give him a suitcase instead of a bag. He's earned that right to do that. Now, you could look at it and say, okay, now forewarned, foreprepared. So Joshua's warned now. He'll be prepared mentally. He'll do what Fury was not prepared to do, take him seriously in all ways, and maybe pick him apart. Counterpunch, stay on the outside, control everything, and show the difference between a polished guy that's a polished boxer, a finished product, a guy who's had, you know, all kinds of amateur boxing experience, all kinds of pro experience. He was an Olympian in the amateurs, won the gold medal. All that experience up against a guy who still doesn't have that experience in the boxing ring. It'll wind up being maybe a fight where he'll just be able to win in a hands-down way. I'm not so quick to say that right now because this guy is a great athlete, Ngannou. He is confident. He does have the mental toughness, which is the most important thing for me. and a belief in himself, which is so important. You know, Josh was a guy who some people think is a little chinny. You know, he got knocked out by Ruiz. You know, he's been hurt before. We know Ngannou can punch. If he could put his hand on that chin, who knows? Who knows? You'd have to figure Joshua's got to be a good favorite, even despite of all that's transpired. But who knows? I got to laugh at Eddie Hearn. He does a great job. He's a multi-millionaire. He followed in his father's footsteps, and he's made it even more than his father made it with that business. He's done a tremendous job putting fights on over there. You know, I always joke around. I say, when I die, I want to come back as an English fighter. So, as an English promoter, so I can make millions of dollars, because the fans over there make you rich. Because they're loyal. They come out and they buy tickets. And they come out. They fill Wembley Stadium to follow their guys with 100,000 people. They come out. This is going to be one of those moments. It's going to be a huge moment. More money for Joshua, who's already got enough money for 10 lifetimes. Hopefully. I'm sure he's a responsible guy. I'm sure he still has Eddie Hearns. All of them. They're going to make more. But, you know, you make it while the sun is shining. You make hay while the sun is shining. The sun's shining right now, where you got the money in Saudi, you got the moment where they're making the most, that they're playing off that moment where he almost shocked the world, almost knocked out the heavyweight champ of the world in his first pro fight. Come on, whoever would think that that script would be made into a movie in Hollywood? You'd say, no, it's too unreasonable. It's too unrealistic. Well, it ain't that unrealistic anymore. So, they're reaping the rewards. And they earned it. Again, he won that night. Even though he lost on the cards, he won. I don't know if he can win again. But, again, I would not count him out. And I did start to say one thing. Give all the credit to Eddie Hearn, but you have to laugh. When before he was saying it was a circus, it was not a credible fight, it was a sideshow, right? And all that. And now it's a very credible fight. And now it's not a sideshow. Now it's a serious fight, you know, because obviously he's in that slot, because he's in that spot. And look, to his defense, you could say it's more credible than it was before. The Fury fight, because we didn't know what Ngannou was capable of. Now we do. So, in fairness to her, you could say now, okay, I said that before, but now I've adjusted my, you know, opinion, because the guy is credible. He showed himself to be credible. But still, Hearn could not. He's a smart promoter. He knows how to make money, and he knows how to take advantage of and he knows what an opportunity is coming up the road. He saw this. He said, oh, I'm going to jump on this one. I'm going to jump on this one. And he did. He jumped on it. He did the right thing. He's making more bags of money for his guy and himself. So it should be interesting. It should be interesting. I can't see... We saw the shortcomings of Ngannou. He's not busy enough, not consistent enough offensively, I don't think, to win a decision. But he punches hard enough, and he's learned enough technically to maybe get in position with his quick hands and his power to maybe score a knockout. You never know. You never know.
Yeah. Hey, one quick thing, though, before we go, for our friends over at MyBookie, I just wanted to get your thoughts on that Beterbiev fight. Beterbiev is a minus 500 favorite, plus 300 on Callum Smith. I know you like Beterbiev probably in the fight, but do you like him enough to lay 500?
I love Beterbiev. I'm not going against him until I see that it's over, that he got old, that Father Time got him, or somebody got him. I'm not going against him, but... as I already laid out, I think it will be a interesting, fun fight to watch with Callum Smith, because Smith will do himself proud. He's a fighter. He's a tough kid. He's he's 33 years old. I call him a kid. He's physically strong. I think he's got to use those long arms on the outside instead of engaging with Beterbiev too much, which he likes to do, Colin Smith, because, as I said, he has the mentality of a fighter. He's going to go get you to the body inside. He figures that he could hurt you that way because he is strong in those areas. But I think it'll be a fun fight to watch. I'm not going against Beterbiev. I might go with the under over if there's a proposition there.
If you think Callum Smith's going to go and get him and Beterbiev can catch him, then you can take Beterbiev to win by knockout is only -210. So you're going to lay 210 to Beterbiev by knockout. And then I've got an over-under for you, 9.5 rounds. Over, +100. Under, -130.
I take the over. I'm going to say Callum Smith, they're going to have a smart enough plan to use those long arms to at least get into some deeper waters. And he went the distance with Canelo. I forget what year that was. Colum did, right? He went the distance, lost the decision to Canelo. So it's not like he hasn't been on a stage with a guy who could punch. I mean, Beterbiev's a whole different animal, but still.
Yeah, he went the 2020, 3 years ago. 2 years ago. It was December of 2020. Yeah, 3 years ago, he went the distance with Canelo in San Antonio, 12 rounds.
One thing I want to point out, I made a note to myself because I try to touch everything. I really liked Ortiz. It's terrible what happened, and we'll figure that out. But he did look good, and now he's looking to fight Tim Zhu, or talking about it.
Yeah.
You know what? I love that fight. But you know what I love more? I love the attitude of Ortiz. He's been off for all this time. Moves up in a weight class. Been inactive. Had all kinds of health problems. You would think he'd won one or two or three fights back. What does he do? He fights one fight, goes one round, and he says, give me Tim Zhu, who's undefeated, who's a good, solid guy.
That's a good point.
Who beat Harris. Tony Harris, which impressed
Harrison.
Me. Harrison, he's a good, solid Zhu. I like Zhu. He can punch. He can fight. I think that maybe Ortiz's defense is a little better. We'll fight. But he's willing to go to Australia, to his backyard, to fight Tim Zhu. It would be a mega fight over there. I would love to see that fight. But again, I give credit to the attitude of he's a fighter. He's a fighter. He's got, and I think Tim Zhu is too, but he's got that fighter's attitude. No, I don't need another. I would want him to have another fight if I was involved. But
yeah.
No, I'm going to beat him. Come on, let's go. I want that. I want that challenge. So I give him credit for that. The only thing I wanted to say other than that was the production of that show on DAZN, the De La Hoya show. And this isn't DAZN in general. This is when, whether it's Hearn. When Hearn does them, it's a different level. But when De La Hoya does them, I got to be frank. I'm not going to change now. I'm not going to try to make friends now. It's a little late for that. But poor production. I mean, the arena, the whole look, the sound.
What about the ringside commentators being dressed in like, basically t-shirts.
The whole look, Ken. You're right.
Look like a high school production. Really?
Ken, to my point, and to that point, it's like the way I was going to compare it, it's like watching a bootleg movie. Really. It had no quality production. And you said it, like a high school production. That's fair, too. It just didn't have that top-level production value and feel and sound to it. And Virgil deserves that. I have to say it. Yeah, Virgil Ortiz. I'm sorry. Virgil Hill was a light heavyweight champion of the world and a silver medalist in the Olympics, for you historians out there that want to test me a little bit on trivia. But I'm like Jackie Gleason. in the Honeymooners with that episode when he was getting ready to win that contest, Name This Tune, and he was practicing with everybody. Name this tune. Name this. So somebody come in and they sing like a half a line. Swami River. You know, sing a Night on the Town. 1941. Aretha Franklin. You know, whatever. And, you know, he was just spitting them out. Anytime somebody would give a couple lines, bang, he would say. But then it came time. He got so cocky. It came time to do the on television, to do the contest, and you're allowed to go as far as you want to go. You win 10,000, keep going, progress, 15, 20, 20. He goes on, he says, I want you to know right now, I'm going right for the $68,000 question, whatever it was. I think that's what it was. And the guy goes, you don't have to say it right now. You could wait, you could see, you know. No. I'm going right for it. I want everyone to know. And no matter what my wife says, I'm going for the $68,000 question. Okay. First one. Bah, 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 bah. He goes, bah, 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 bah. Who's the composer of this great song? Ed Norton. Because Ed Norton was the guy who played the piano for him, his friend, right, who lived upstairs. And that was the one song. Ed Norton used to warm up with that, and he used to hit Norton, push him in the back. Stop! Let's get to it. Stop playing that. He never found out what that song was. It was Swami River. Anyway, little history there.
One more thing before we go. The Anthony Joshua and Ngannou fight, just want to get your early thoughts here. Joshua minus 700, and Ngannou plus 500. Anything jump out at you in terms of making a bet there?
Yeah, give me the 500. I'll take it. And then now, all the haters, so don't go crazy. Oh, you hate the English fight. No, I don't. I love you. You hate Joshua. No, I don't. No, I don't. Even though he didn't win the Olympic gold, I was there. I called the fight against the Italian. He didn't win that. But the fight was in London, and there was no way he was leaving that arena without a gold medal around his neck. Okay? But other than that, listen, I have nothing against him. He's good for the sport. He's a gentleman. He conducts himself like a gentleman, like a champion. He brings huge crowds. He brings money to the sport. He makes money for who's fighting him. He's great. He's great. He's a little overrated, but that's okay. You know, but truth is the truth. But he's great in those dimensions I just said. But so don't go nuts and say, oh, you're just going against him. No, I know that. His chin can be a little chinny sometimes, a little bit. And I know that Ngannou can punch. And if he could get to him, you never know. It's worth a throwaway bet. I'll call it a throwaway because I would pick Joshua to win. But it's worth, if you're going to give me 5-1, 500 to 100, right? Is that what it is, Ken? 500 to 100?
Yep. 500.
Yeah, I'm going to take it. That's all. You know what? I'll take it.
While we're on the topic of British fighters, I have to give a special shout out to boxing and UFC superfan Ed Skrein. My buddy Ed Skrein, who's the star of the new Netflix blockbuster Rebel Moon. Shout out Ed Skrein. The guy knows everything about boxing and he's a huge fan of the show. Teddy told me to tell you, he says hello.
Hello, Ed.
With that, Teddy, I think we covered everything for this week, and UFC back in action next Saturday night, as well as the Better BF Callum Smith fight. So we'll have plenty to break down next week. You got anything else, Teddy, before we say goodbye?
Just looking through my notes, trying to see if I, you know, if I missed a little nugget here or there. That's why I take notes. But no, I think we are. I think we pretty much covered everything. And everybody continue, I hope, to have a great 2024, better than the one that started for Oscar and his his crew. You know, really?
It's an eventful week. Your fighters are making demands on to you via Twitter. You're getting into shoving matches with other fighters' dads. It's a rough go that first week. One of your new signees gets smashed in the first round in a fight that they thought that he was going to just walk all over Barroso. So yeah, not a great start for them, but nevertheless, everyone back in action next week. Look forward to seeing everyone. Please subscribe to the show on YouTube if you haven't already. It's a huge help for us. And as always, we appreciate you guys. And we'll be back next week with more fight action. Have a great week, everyone.